Hey, who's your speaker today?
Ooh, good question. It says here, Brian Tome. Oh, Brian Tome. I read it wrong.
That's a common mistake.
Yeah, what do we know about Brian?
Good question. I think he may ride a motorcycle.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Also, he likes fart jokes.
He does like a good fart joke. He
loves them.
And I think he knows something about building people.
I think he does. And that's great because that's exactly what we're talking about today.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Hey, Brian Tome, everybody.
Well, it's great to be here. If you're new at Crossroads over the last 3 weeks or so, you might not know who I am. I'm this thing called a senior pastor. I take a different rhythm over the summers. And for those of you who've been around for a bit longer time, you know, this is even unusual right now, kind of plopping in the middle. I'm trying different things to keep myself, my family developed, and all of our church developed. And taking a different rhythm where I don't do the same things that I normally do throughout the whole year, I get to restore myself, study some different things, and other people around here get to do things that I was doing before. It really helps with the developmental process here at Crossroads. And today, we're going to talk about the developmental process in the arena of the family. And whether you're in a family right now as an older person, younger person, you want to have a family someday, or you want to have family-like relationships with people, this, I think, is going to be very helpful for you. So let's pray right now. God, thank you for just the honor it is to be here. It really is. It's a privilege to be able to talk about the things that are close to your heart in a way that is helpful for people, or at least I hope it's helpful. So help me to be used by you, to be in alignment with your mind, and to have all that is said be profitable in developing every person that's given their time to be here today. And I pray these things according to your name. Amen. So it's good to do different things, good to stretch yourself. One of the things that I did recently that's unusual and different for me is I went to a concert. I can't remember the last concert I went to. I really can't. But I just went to one on Friday. My daughter and I, my youngest daughter, Mariah and I, went over to West Virginia to look at one of the hottest bands, one of my favorite bands, Florida Georgia Line. Yes, any Florida Georgia Line fans in the house?
Baby, you a song, you made me want to roll my windows down and cruise.
Oh, man, come on. Florida Georgia Line. I don't care who you are. That's good stuff right there. That's amazing. So we go to West Virginia, Clarksburg, West Virginia, and they must have booked this concert before their album just blew up. They're 3 weeks away from having the longest number one song in the country charts. That song I just played there. I was amazed by how small the venue was. We had really great seats. As we're waiting for the concert to start, the main act, I'm standing in line someplace, and I have some guy walk by me. I got my phone out as quickly as I could. I took a picture of it. Yeah, that's good stuff right there. Camo suspenders and a tuft of hair on the lower back. That's always good. I'm ruminating on this scene, and I'm standing in line, and then this guy cuts in line, and I got a better shot of this time, what the guy does. He goes like right between here, does his deal. And I turn around, and I look at the guys who are behind me, and I go, now that's West Virginia. And the guys look at me like they saw no humor in the situation at all, and all of a sudden I realize, oh, I'm in West Virginia. You are West Virginians with cut-off sleeves on your T-shirts, and you don't see the humor in that. See, one of the things that I've learned when I came to Ohio, you know, in Ohio, we have the jokes. If you live in Ohio, the Northern Kentucky jokes or the Kentucky jokes, all that kind of stuff. I knew all those jokes before I moved to Cincinnati. I knew them because in Pittsburgh, we had all those jokes for West Virginians. Same jokes. In fact, some of them were better. They haven't even made their way down here to be translated yet. Here's one of my favorite ones. What's a favorite pickup line in West Virginia? Hey, babe, nice tooth. That's the favorite pickup line that's very effective to be used. And here's what I learned. When I came from Pittsburgh, where we picked on West Virginia, came here to Ohio, where in Ohio we pick on Kentuckians. Sorry, Florence. But you know what? What happens in Michigan? They have Ohio jokes. You know, if you go around various areas of Kentucky, There will be Kentuckians telling Indiana jokes, Kentuckians telling Tennessee jokes. And why is that? It's because all of us, we want to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. And it's an easy way to make ourselves feel better about ourselves by putting somebody else down, having some humor with it. And actually, one of the things I found is that most people feel like they're further developed than they actually are. They do. Most of us feel that we're further developed, more spiritually mature than we actually are. Developing people, as we close out our series today, there's not a more higher intense, higher paying venue to develop people than actually inside the home, inside a place where kids are born and raised. Libby and I prayed for kids when we had kids. We wanted kids not because we wanted to fit the American ideal of 2-point-something kids, not because we wanted to have a fulfilling Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that. We did it because we wanted to have somebody to spiritually develop their entire life. When I was in ministry doing work with junior high kids and then senior high kids, part of the reason why I moved to new places beyond that, not above that, but just different than that, is I was personally frustrated with the developmental cycle of working with somebody and they graduate and they go away and I can't work with them any longer. I love the process of developing people. I love that I'm a part of a church that wants to develop people. And there's no greater developmental zone than somebody who's in your family, either of your DNA, or somebody you have adopted, somebody you are fostering, or somebody you are just taking under your wing to actually take them to new places. The early term for people who are followers of Jesus, one early term, was Christian. It was actually a negative term. It meant little Christ. And the followers of Jesus heard that term that was meant to be negative, and they said, "Oh, you're telling me I'm a little Christ? I'll take that." Because that tells me that Jesus' life is being replicated inside of me, that I'm being developed to be like him. The person who had the biggest impact on my early spiritual formation and my earliest leadership was Denny Patton. He worked with me from about 15 up through, 20-something. And I remember that he was a hard-charging leader. And many hard-charging leaders bother other people, sometimes justifiably bother them. Sometimes people just put baggage on top of them. And there was one person that he was not on their good side, and I didn't know this guy at all. I met him for the first time. I was in this group, and I was talking, and I must have said something that reminded this guy of Denny, and he looked at everybody in the circle, and he said, "Who's this? Is this a little Dennyite? This is a little Denny." And I remember as an 18-year-old feeling like saying something witty back to a 30-something-year-old, I wasn't smart and witty enough or even maybe courageous enough to do that. But if I could relive that over, I would say, "Gosh, call me a little Denny, I'll take that. Whatever faults he has, I will take the holistic view of his life. I'll take that to my life." This is what is called discipleship. Discipleship is when you replicate your life in somebody else's life. Jesus said, one of the last things he said is, "Go and make disciples. Go and make disciples to the ends of the earth." And he wasn't saying, just go to people who know me and give them more knowledge or insights. When he said, go and make disciples, that meant going to places where people had never heard of Jesus, maybe had no religious background at all, bring them to faith, and then developing them along. Now, it's interesting. When Jesus says, go and make disciples in the book of Matthew, after he says that, to a Jewish audience, the word disciple, discipleship, never comes up again. Why is that? It's because Jesus was Jewish. He grew up in a Jewish context, in a Hebrew culture, and they understood certain words in their context. Discipleship meant you are a rabbi, and you gather disciples around you, and you disciple them to replicate the life of the rabbi. Jesus was a rabbi, and he was discipling his 12 to replicate his life. And so in a Jewish culture, when he says, go and make disciples, everyone says, oh, got it, I understand it. But when it gets outside the Jewish culture, when people actually then go out into the Hellenistic areas of the world, the Greek cultures, where they have no understanding of the rabbinical culture of discipleship, the dominant metaphor that's used is one of parent-child. It is a family metaphor. In fact, we still do this today. I mean, sometimes people might say, well, why doesn't Crossroads use that word or say this or that? We use words that a culture can understand. And this is the way it is in the scriptures. They don't use the word discipleship in a Greek culture because they don't understand a disciple rabbinical sort of relationship. Here's an example of the parent metaphor in a people development context in the New Testament. It says this, my little children, I'm writing these things to you so that you may not sin. He's not talking, John is not talking to his DNA children. He's talking to people who he's been developing, who are on his spiritual downline. And this is what happens. When you build into somebody spiritually, you're helping them not to do certain things that you know they shouldn't do and helping them to do things you know that they are able to do. Able to do. Kirk Perry talked a couple weeks ago about how to develop people in business. Didn't he do a great job? Awesomeness, awesomeness, awesomeness. And one of the things he says in that is that people want to be great. So we have to develop them because people want to be great. I do believe people want to be great, but I don't believe kids want to be great. I don't think kids understand the concept of greatness. I don't think kids understand the concept of if I do things today I don't want to do, I'll be able to do things tomorrow that I want to do. Kids, they're not born with that. We eventually want something more. We want greatness, but in a home environment, when you're building with somebody, they don't know that. And so you have the opportunity to develop somebody to be great, to even define what greatness is for them. Jim Collins, in the book that Kirk talked about, called Great by Choice, which I've read this summer, really interesting book. What he takes a look at is how is it some companies, some businesses outperform the rest of their peers by 10x? He calls them 10xers. And one of the things he does throughout the whole book is tries to correlate successful organizational dynamics with something that took place in 1911 when two people made a mad dash for the South Pole. Roald Amundsen and Robert Falcon Scott, in 1911, both wanted to be the very first person to reach the South Pole. And Jim Collins puts down all the different ways they went about their expedition, totally different. Amundsen got there. Scott not only didn't get there, everyone died on the way to there. And so he looks at the things that Amundsen did and said, these are things that people do who want to do things in a great manner. One of the things that Amundsen did is he hit a consistent march every day. He averaged 15 point something miles a day. And what Collins calls this is a 20-mile march. And he says great people, great organizations hit their marks every day, every week, every quarter, every year. And they don't overstretch, they don't understretch. They just hit the same consistent things. So Amundsen, he got up in the morning, and if it was an amazing day and they could have gotten more marches in sunlight, when they had gone their prescribed amount, he just shut it down. When he woke up in the morning, if it was a bad day and when other people would have said, let's not go out today, he said, no, we're going to hit our marks. He hit a consistent pace, whereas with Scott, if it was great and beautiful, he pushed people till they were totally fatigued and they were messed up the next several days. If it was awful weather, they wouldn't get up and they wouldn't go. They would just hunker down. I like what he says about this quote. He applies it to business, but I've actually changed the word business to family because I think it works really, really well, really well. Here's what it says. A family can always adopt a 20-mile march discipline, even if it hasn't had such discipline earlier in its history. You might hear me say some things today that if you're a parent right now or were a parent, you're going to go, oh, gosh, I feel pretty good about myself because that guy's got some problems up there. You might hear that. You might hear some things up here where you're going to say, oh, man, why didn't I do that? I'm not doing that. I'm a loser. I wish I would have heard that 20 years ago. Wherever you are right now, if you have anybody who looks to you to parent them, and there could be a 25-year-old that looks to you to parent them who's not of your DNA, I'm telling you, you can start right now with identifying key disciplines, hitting those marks, and developing people, and they and you will be better off. Two key disciplines to think about, and whatever you do, however you structure your family, is play and purpose. Play and purpose. Every person who is developed has to have an environment where there is play and an environment where there is purpose. There is a point. The Apostle Paul, talking to his quote-unquote spiritual children, look what he says to them in the book of 1 Thessalonians. But we were gentle among you like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. For you knew how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God. So again, here he is talking to somebody who's not of his own DNA, people he's developing them, and he's taking on the parenting role. This is parenting language. He's likening himself to a woman, a nursing mother, and to a father. And look at how we see words that I would call low-challenging, nurturing, you might say playful words. Here's a couple of them here. The words gentle, encouraged. Isn't that when play is really good? I mean, you're feeling good, you're feeling nurtured. I mean, it might be dangerous or adventuresome kind of play, but still, you're encouraged in your abilities and your aptitudes. Look at the purpose statements that he has in here. Exhorted, charged. I exhorted you, I charged you. So there's both of these elements of his development with people, playfulness and purposefulness. Let me tell you something. If you can get strategic and thoughtful about when the times of play are going to be scheduled and how purpose is scheduled, what's the point of the family existing? What are the purposeful things that we're doing? You are going to have children who are going to be developed and who are going to thrive. A friend of mine, Mike Breen, let me in on a matrix for how to develop and disciple people. And interestingly enough, this matrix really works really well. And it's two things that Libby and I have been very intentional about, but he put it in a matrix form that I think is just awesome. Let me share it with you. We have here the matrix of developing people. There's high play. If you're in the play zone, you're in the black. Low play, you're in the red. High purpose, you're in the black. Low purpose, you're in the red. So let's look at the extremes of what happens with people who are in these various quadrants. First is low play and low purpose. A child who is low play, low purpose is dying. This is the dying quadrant. I don't mean you're dying physically. I just mean emotionally they're dying, spiritually they're dying. The family is dying because there's no reason to be around the family unit. As soon as they graduate and get out of the house, why would they come back? There's no sense of play. There's no sense of purpose. So the whole relationship is just sort of that. They're just flatlined. This happens in an unfortunate situation where people are in foster care and perhaps you're fostering a child and you're not thinking about it from a developmental standpoint. You're thinking about it maybe from a duty standpoint. Hey, you can foster a child, adopt a child, be a big brother, be a big sister, and think through play and purpose. It also happens in DNA families. It happens all the time, actually. Some guys get married and their driven checklist attitude gives them all kinds of energy to woo the person to the altar, but then they're not able to translate that energy into maintaining and growing the relationship. And I've seen this happen in families, men and women who have checklist families. They want to have a family, but they're not really sure why. What's the point? What's the purpose? I told you our point and purpose was to develop people spiritually for an entire life, prepare them to impact the world. But if you don't know why you want to have kids and what the whole point and purpose is, it can be a checklist thing where you're just not strategic about the play and the purposefulness of why they're on the planet and why your family unit exists. Another extreme in our quadrant is when you are high purpose, low play. This is what we would call being driven. I would call it driven. This is a child that's in a home and got driven parents. We've heard of tiger moms or such, and you're just going, come on, yeah, 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 mule, yeah, achieve, woo, woo. When I say whoa, I mean whoa. You're constantly driving the kid. Who remembers that old cartoon? Those are when cartoons are real cartoons. Yeah, mule, yeah. When I say whoa, I mean yes. And then he goes down the whole stegosaurus back. Boom, 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 boom. YouTube it, those of you who are young. It's back when entertainment was entertainment. It was great stuff. So anyway, drivenness. This is oftentimes parents who have the only purpose for their kids is to get to college and succeed financially. And you can be, at that situation, you can be driving them constantly to hit their grades, driving them to go. but there's not a sense of joy in the family. There's not a sense of playfulness. There's nothing that woos that kid to come back into the family structure. Why would they want to go back to boot camp? There has to be levels of play. Sometimes this can look like moms driving their daughters to have a specific, or dads driving their women to have a specific body type, body image, driving their sons to fulfill some sort of image for masculinity or some such thing. In my line of work, this can be very, very dangerous because there's a lot of pastors who drive their kids to hit certain holiness standards, morality standards, Bible knowledge standards because we want ourselves to look good. In fact, I noticed this. I saw people, and this is when I was younger, before I had kids, I just saw some kids just get whacked out in preacher families and stuff like that. And I said, I got to have standards. I have to, you know, push my kids, but there's a line. I can't push them someplace just because I'm a pastor in order to make myself look good. I've got to parent them like I love Jesus, but I work on an automotive assembly line. How would I do it that way versus this way? Because you could be just driving your kids spiritually to succeed spiritually or to look successful spiritually, but there's not a playful, loving interaction with God at all. Next extreme, high play, low purpose. This is what I would call diapers. This is when the child is perpetually in diapers, where you really don't let the kid have space. You don't let them succeed. You're solving all their problems. And sometimes it means you baby them their whole life. Have you ever seen this? You ever seen like a six-year-old, a parent trying to get their six-year-old in the car? Okay, let's go. It's time to go to the car. Come on now. Let's go. Or they're in the mall and like, come on, come on. Like, what? They're six. I never did the baby talk with my kids. Never did the, why would I want to keep you as a little immature, stupidy peepee? No. I want to talk with my kids. I want to talk with them. Get used to hearing adult conversation, adult tones of voice, because no one talks this way is successful. No. Sometimes parents who err on the side of high playfulness, low purpose, always rescuing their kids, always getting them out of every difficult circumstance. No, man, you gotta let your kids sit in their poop. You do. It's one of the motivators to getting kids out of diapers. I'm not saying you intentionally don't change diapers so your kid gets diaper rash. I'm saying there's definitely a motivator when you sit in squishy, stinky stuff and you get a rash. There's a motivator to get to underoos. There is. And parents who are developing kids recognize they have to allow their kids to have a level of consequences to grow them because there's a purpose beyond just having fun in the family. And sometimes we see the diaper discipline, the diaper-driven sort of catacorner thing playing out by kids who are perhaps very accomplished in grades, very accomplished in high school, and then they go away to college and they tank. Why is that? Well, it's either because their parents had them in diapers and didn't allow them to fail, or they never failed because their parents were always driving them. When's your next test? When's your this? We have two kids who are in college, 22 and 20, and just realized that if you want to go to college, great. You have this amount of money that we've set aside that you got to work with, this amount of money. If you want to go look at a college, you need me to drive you there, I'll take a tour with you. But it's not like me getting my jollies off by taking you on college tours. If you want to do them, we'll do them. If you find a college you want to go to and you want to apply, you apply. I'm not going to look at your essay. If you want me to read your essay, I'll read your essay. Actually, one of them, I wish they would have asked me to read their essay, because after they turned it in, it was really bad. It was really bad. But what's my thought there? My thought and intention there is, if you can't have the level of drive on your own to do this while you're under my roof, how in the world are you going to have the ability to do that when you're out from under my tutelage and you are in a very temptation-filled environment? The fourth extreme is developed, where you're in an environment that is high play and high purpose. And this is not sort of 50% play, 50% purpose. There are times when it is all about play, and there's times when it's all about purpose. It's a squiggly line that goes back and forth. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14 to 16 puts it this way. I do not write these things to make you ashamed, but to admonish you as my beloved children. For though you have countless guides in Christ, you do not have many fathers. For I became your father in Christ Jesus through the gospel. I urge you then to be imitators of me. To be an imitator of me. All of us have people we admire and respect. Hopefully we have people we want to be like. That's actually a healthy thing. To see someone as a role model. I want to be like that person. Go in your mind through those people you'd like to be like, and you're probably going to find that they are playful and they are purposeful. When Paul, the Apostle Paul says, be an imitator of me, he has a life that's worth mimicking. He has a life that people want. I'll tell you what, I don't want to be around people that are all about work all the time and all about goals and all about accomplishments, and you don't either. Any of us who read Steve Jobs' biography, virtually an autobiography, any of us who read that, I haven't heard anybody who read that and said, boy, I want to be Steve Jobs. The guy was all about purpose all the time, and there wasn't a depth to his relationships. There wasn't a playfulness to him at all. We want to imitate people who have a playful side and are making a difference in the world. And that's why the Apostle Paul says, imitate me. Build off from me. I love how Joe Saxton put it last week. How great did she do? Man, how good was that? Wish I had that accent. I want it now. She said this, I want the ceiling of my life to be the floor they are standing on, the floor my kids are standing on. Three quick hitter things to think about if you want to develop somebody. Here they are. Number one, stability. Kids need stability. They need the same person in the same place on a regular basis. This doesn't mean that you can't have a traveling sales job. It just means you need to be a stable force, a grounding force in their life. And very closely related to that, but different, is predictable. They need stability and they need predictability. The biggest heroes for me in this area are those in this room who are single parents. Oh my goodness, if you were a single parent, hats off to you, put it over my heart. Crazy amount of energy it takes for you to do what you do. Crazy. I don't know how you do it, but I know God gives grace when grace is needed. And you are doing an amazing, whatever job you're doing, I promise you're doing better than I would as a single parent because it is really, really, really rough. One of the benefits when you're in a home where you have a mom and a dad is, biblically speaking, a man and a woman come together and we become one. Not a joint partnership, but one. Now, here's an interesting way that this plays out in the parenting realm. When I realized that Libby and I were one person, all of a sudden, I was more grace-giving of the things that she was weak in because I was strong in them. I became less bummed out about my deficiencies, my personal deficiencies, because she was strong in them. See, you as a parent, if you're in a parenting home where you're married, you don't have to be the 50-50 person. Your spouse doesn't have to be the 50-50 person. In fact, in all likelihood, one of you leverages play better and the other leverages purpose better, and that's okay so long as you're predictable. Your kids know that you're predictable. My kids, they know that Libby is the play one, and that, therefore she's the more encouraging one. She's the easier one to get along. She's the one they go hit up for money. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've had this discussion. No, you can't go to But they just know. Part of it is like, man, how come you're not asking me for money? Part of it is I am angry they're asking for money. But nonetheless, it's always her. And finally, I realized, wait a minute, they're going to her because she has a predictable nature of playfulness, a predictable nature of giving, and that's stable for them. And guess what? Every time there's a car accident, which there's too many, every time there's a car, anytime there's a crunch time, anytime, guess who they're calling? Dad. Because Dad's the purpose guy. Dad's really great in crunch time. Dad's really great when you got an issue. And I don't think Libs are there going, oh, they're not going to. See, there's a predictability that makes us one in the midst of the purposefulness and the playfulness within our house. Three, vulnerability. vulnerability. We need to be people who model what it looks like to say I messed up, who model mistakes. One of the ways that we can be vulnerable with our kids is to tell them about our problems, tell them about our past mistakes. One of the things I want to do with all my kids is I want to be first to market in everything they need to hear. We do a sex series around Crossroads. People get upset sometimes about the language that is used from on stage or the concepts. Normally, it's people who have kids that are inside the auditorium. And I always say two things to that. Number one, there's this thing called Kids Club. You might want to try it. Number two, there's no terminology, no story, no nothing I've ever said in a sex series from here on stage that I haven't been telling my kids since they were 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I never wanted my kids to ever hear a sex term from somebody else. No matter how crude it might be, I want them to hear from me first. And I want them to hear the actual truth behind it. I want to be first to market. I want to control their attitudes on it before somebody else tries to control them on it. I want to be first to market by telling them who you are, by giving them their identity. Kids will try to find their identity someplace. I don't want my kids to try to find their identity someplace. I want to be the first to market to tell them who they are, what God thinks of them, what their strengths are. And part of how I'm able to do that is I'm able to share some of the mistakes I've made. My mistakes haven't disqualified me. My mistakes have qualified me because I have some learnings from the stupid things I've done that I don't want them to have to repeat. I want them to exceed me. I could wax eloquent on this for a bit longer, or maybe I'm not waxing eloquent. I could blab a bit more. Or we could bring up some people who have been our real live laboratory. So we're going to do that right now. Please welcome my youngest daughter and my oldest daughter to our stage right now. Yes!
Baby, a song, you make me want to roll my windows down and cruise.
Now, why are you not dating? You were dancing with me the other night.
Because you're embarrassing right now. You should stop.
I know. It's what I do. It was one of my fun, playful things. I've always liked to embarrass you guys in public.
We know.
That's been very good, yes. So, give us your names. Tell us who you are.
Okay. I'm Lena. We met briefly earlier. I am 22, and I'm proudly Cincinnati because I go to the hashtag hottest college in America. Go Bearcats. Yes. And I actually planned our matching outfits. Just kidding.
We did not plan.
Totally on accident that we're matching.
Yes.
I'm Mariah. I'm 15, and I'm a sophomore in high school.
Great. So we've been talking about this playfulness, purposefulness. Lena, why don't we start with you? How have you seen play and purpose work out in our family?
Yeah. So there are a couple different ways. I think growing up, we were a little bit heavier on the purpose side when I was younger for various reasons. But we also had a lot of play. I remember probably around the time I was 6 or 7 years old, we had a trampoline in the front yard. Let me just set up a little bit of context for you. The trampoline had no netting around it. It was like straight just trampoline. On Linwood Avenue in Mount Lookout, on top of a hill. So like you go down, you fall off the trampoline, you go down the hill onto the sidewalk. Yeah, so this was our favorite toy, Jake and I. And so we'd have dinner together every night as a family. We'd sit down together. And then after dinner, we knew that Dad was home from work, and that was we were going to play with Dad. So during the time of the trampoline, it was always the trampoline in the summers. And so this was standard every night. And usually Jake and I would be done eating. Mariah wasn't around yet. Jake and I would be done eating earlier than our parents. And Dad would say, when I'm done with my wine, we'll go play.
Trampolines are always better after alcohol. Always.
So an average night around this time, he would have about this much wine left in his wine glass. And so Jake and I would be like, are you done yet? Are you finished? Are you going to be done yet? And we'd sit there like this and just watch him drink his wine. And this is what it would look like. And he wasn't drinking any of it. He just was making us wait longer to play. But anyways, we had a lot of fun playing. We tried to do something playful once, which was not playful. We decided to go on a hike. We were in California. This was before he wore hiking shoes on stage and thought he was a great hiker. We weren't about that when I was younger.
No, not at all.
At all. And so we are out in California, and he hears about this great trail we should go hiking on. Well, it's in the desert, like actually in the desert. And
but they said there was an oasis.
They said there was an oasis, so
somewhere.
He thought, this will be fun for my 8-year-old, my 6-year-old, and my almost 1-year-old. Let's take a bottle of Gatorade with us. So this is a picture of us prior to the hike. We're like, oh, this will be fun, something new as a family. No, it was 106 degrees, and we were like stripping down into our bathing suits halfway through. I'm crying my eyes out like, can we stop, please? I hate this. Like, it was awful. And he's there going, keep moving. You'll be fine. Suck it up. We only have 3 more hours. It's not that hot. It's only 106 degrees. I mean, just hounding us to keep going. My most miserable moment. This is actually a picture at the end. I'm unhappy. Mariah may have been more unhappy, but she just couldn't speak.
It was so funny because we always focused on how bad you look in that photo because your bad attitude that day. But Mariah's the one. Oh my goodness! No wonder you have problems right now, Mariah.
Shut up.
We were robbed of every ounce of whatever from your body. Yeah.
So, anyways. Those are some examples of play and purpose, maybe a little bit too much purpose, of our younger days as a family.
That was my unfortunate waitings, especially earlier on. I was always the purpose guy. In fact, I felt guilty if there was any play. That was an outage of my relationship with God. So I, in the early days, was all about purpose all the time. You, on the other hand, you've had maybe a different side.
Yeah, I didn't grow up like Lena did because she had the whole church starting and everything, and I didn't because I came along later. But I did have some purpose and play that kind of like worked together. When I was younger, we would go to a restaurant, and I'd probably be like the only one that would get a kid's menu. With a kid's menu, you'd get like crayons, and there'd be coloring and like games and all this stuff. So there was a word search all the time. So we decided we'd
that
have
thing where you have the box of letters and you
I think people know what a word search is.
I don't know. People might not. How many people did not know what word search was? Raise your hand if you did not know what word search is. There's one right there. I'm always thinking about the one lonely lamb that's left out on his own right there.
One out of 3,500. Okay,
keep going, yes.
I would have to get 4 extra menus and extra crayons, so I would have to get up from the table. I was 5. I'd have to get up from the table and look for a waiter or waitress, and I was so intimidated because I was so shy, and I was like, oh, I don't want to talk to some random person and ask for menus, but he made me, and I did, and I'd come back, and we'd do it, and it was fun. And
we'd have a contest.
Yeah, we'd have a contest.
And Lena, who won?
You. Yeah. When she was 10, against this loser. But yeah, so that purpose and play kind of worked together, like him pushing me to go outside my comfort zone.
Now, both you guys had maybe a bit of extreme of the existence. Selena, talk about your extreme of the purpose that was really good that you're thankful for in the early days of Crossroads.
Yeah, so we moved to Cincinnati when I was 4 or 5 years old to start Crossroads. And so Jake and I, this was before Mariah was born, so Jake and I were really involved in this, in the startup of the church. And so what this looked like for me specifically was on Sunday mornings, we'd wake up at 6 a.m. when it was dark out, and we'd all go into church, and we'd have to set up everything because it was when it was at the school. And so we'd have to spend an hour or two setting things up, and then we'd be there until 2 or 3 p.m. for all the services, and we had roles that we played. So Jake did facilities, so he was cleaning up coffee cups up and down the aisles and putting on seat covers. And I was working in the nursery. If any of your kids were there when I was 5 years old working in the nursery, I hope they turned out all
right. Standards have gone up. Standards have gone up.
Yeah. We were hurting for volunteers back then. So that was a typical Sunday. On Saturday nights, I'd go in with my dad for the run-through of things, and I'd sit in the debrief sessions with, 7 to 10 adults in this little back room on stage, And my dad and the people in the room would encourage me to give my feedback. So at 7 years old, I'm giving my opinion of how services were going and how his sermon was. And I think that was the first time that I was encouraged to express my opinion and to speak professionally with adults. And so I think that that really helped me out in the long run and trained me in how to do that.
So, yeah, Lena came along, and we had no options. You just had to be about the family purpose, which was starting Crossroads, getting it going. Now our family purpose includes Crossroads. We're really much more of Cincinnati, being a blessing to Cincinnati, and as well as the purpose of developing both of the kids. But I think that one of our things we probably overswung, since I was so deficient on the play side earlier on, I've kind of come back and have really been trying to be very proficient on the play side with you, mm-hmm. and maybe to my and your detriment, not as diligent on the purpose side. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I missed out on a lot of things that Lena and Jake had, so it's like achieving things, or like Lena was always like the straight A student and got everything done, and it's kind of like harder for me. It doesn't come as naturally, and I have to push myself a little harder, and you have to push me a little harder than it was for Lena.
You're pretty smart, because I wanted you to do this weekend, and I knew you wouldn't necessarily want to do it, but since you're under my roof, I made you do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can do that. You really can. Sometimes you can make them do stuff. I made you do this, and because in my mind, my heart, I wanted you to feel the level of purpose of being used by God. I wanted you to be stretched. I wanted you to develop some public speaking skills. And you're not just talking about, you think it's been good for you this weekend?
Yeah, I think it's helping me grow as a person and whatever. That stuff.
No,
but,
go,
no,
don't.
No, it really is.
Come on. I thought what I heard.
It is. For real.
It is. All right. Yes. She's not being convincing here. You're not at all.
No, it is. I'm happy I'm doing it.
Yeah, it is. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Okay, how about any advice you'd give, or is there anything that being in our family has taught you about God? Has it affected your ways that you view Jesus?
Yeah, for me, it totally has. Because I grew up with so much more purpose and drive, it's been harder for me now being older to focus on the play side of things, because I always want to be achieving and I want to be high performance and I want to have results, which are things I'm working through. But that being said, I have to be more intentional about the play time that I have. And so as a family, specifically my mom and dad have really made it an effort to make sure that we have playtime as a family. And I don't live at home anymore. I haven't lived at home for a couple years. And there are reasons for me to want to go home beyond just I need to go home for family dinner because I haven't been there in 3 weeks and I need to get my laundry done or whatever it might be. I'm getting better about doing that.
You mean
myself.
You need to have your mother do your laundry
No,
for
I
you.
Do my own laundry.
Yeah,
Jake?
Right, sure.
No, not the case. Anyways, so for me, I think through that intentional playtime, I've been able to see God as being a God that has fun and has a sense of humor and isn't always about the drive, whereas in most of my life, that's kind of the camp that I've put him in. And so that's been really beneficial for me, especially over the last couple of years. And going through the journey, I realized that the journey home that we did a couple months ago, I've really realized that. And I think for those of you who have kids who are no longer in your house, there's still huge opportunity to have this play and purpose, and you just have to be extremely intentional about it. We do really fun things. It's not just let's go play cards on a Friday night, although sometimes we do play cards and that's great, but we've done a lot of adventure. We've gone snowmobiling, we go camping. We try new things as a family that are stretching for all of us and new fun things that make us want to go home beyond the old everyday things that we've always done. Mm. So I would just encourage you to take input from your kids of what is fun for them and what they would want to do, and then go try things.
For advice for like high schoolers or anything, I'd just say like if your parents are pushing you to do something, like this weekend I didn't really want to be talking in front of all of you, but I just say your parents are just trying to help you grow as a person and give you more purpose in your life. So.
I think you have a good other side of the coin, what Lena said too. She talked about her view of God as purpose. You have a different view of God that's opposite of that because of your background. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I think a lot, like, for kids, like, they think God's always about, like, can't do this, do this. It's all about, like, structure and all that stuff, and they just look at the purpose part of God. But God wants you to have fun in your life and enjoy it. Like, I grew up having fun.
So you have fun around me, then?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, hey, let's thank my daughters right now for going out on a limb. Great stuff. You want to close in prayer? Why don't you close in prayer?
Sure. Dear God, thank you for this time that we're having right now, and I pray that people would walk out of this auditorium and have more insight into how to build their families, and I hope that we have a great rest of the weekend. Amen.
Amen. Amen. All right, hey, have a phenomenal weekend. We'll see you next weekend.